Well, thanks everybody for showing up tonight. Tonight we're talking about some insurance programs, and we have Charlie Johnson, who is the co-owner of the Eastco Group, and he is the co-owner with his sister, Jen, and they are the fifth generation ranchers out of Eastern Colorado, and they've been specializing in these ag programs for about 10 years. So Charlie's going to discuss the pasture, range, and forage insurance, and then he'll also touch on the livestock risk protection program. So take it away, Charlie.
Thanks, Holly. Thanks. Alex is the one that invited me, and looking forward to it. Sounds like you guys have a neat group, and this is a neat tradition, this bull session deal. I wish someone in Colorado did something like this. You know, just quit real quick, and Holly basically did it for me. But yeah, I'm with Eastco Group. My sister and I founded it. We have hired a half dozen agents now and some back office staff, but we sell PRFs, our bread and butter. That's probably 80% of what we do. And then the other 20 is the livestock programs, mostly LRP. I live on the family ranch in Kit Carson, Colorado, center of the state, but about 40 miles from Kansas, so far east. And I live on the ranch. That's what I do every day. And then I do this part-time and seasonally. My sister is full-time, lives in Denver, and does it all the time. We bought this product before we sold this product. You know, I think the product came out in 2007. I think Colorado, it didn't start till 2009. And, you know, our dad signed up the first couple of years, and then Jen got into it. So, you know, we come from this, and both these products, you know, we believe in them, we use them, we like, so we're not selling something that we don't believe in. So yeah, I'll start with PRF. And, you know, I'm operating under the assumption that most of you, you know, are somewhat familiar with this product. I'm not going to get too down in the weeds into all the details of it. Try to keep it a little bigger picture, more of an overview. You know, I'm happy to talk details with anyone at any time, but for tonight's purpose, I want to just kind of overview and then open up for discussion. The official name is Pasture, Rangeland, and Forage Insurance. You'll hear it called a lot of things: rainfall, drought, pasture, grass. You know, there is only one real product. So anytime you hear those terms, this is what it's talking about. The concept of it is quite simple. The execution is much more difficult, but the concept is you pay premium and then you get money back when your precipitation is lower than average. Now, determining what average is and how much you get, and you know, like I say, the details get really complicated, but the idea fairly simple. You can do it on any owned leased ground as long as you have the intention to graze livestock or produce hay. I like to go back and kind of talk about the history of PRF and where it came from. I think it's important in understanding the product. So Congress passed, it's called the Agricultural Risk Protection Act in 2000. And kind of the idea here was, hey, the row crop farmers in the United States have had a strong safety net for a long time, for decades. You know, if you're growing corn, cotton, wheat, barley, you know, any row crop, you've probably been participating in federal crop insurance for a long time. But at the same point in 2000, there wasn't, you know, much there for the livestock producers of the country. So they saw this need. They passed the act in 2000. Government, of course, operates how the government operates, and not a lot happened until 2006. In 2007, they released a pilot program. Is mostly down in Texas. And then I think it went nationwide in 2009. And again, the idea was, you know, we want to help the livestock guys of the country. And the conclusion, which I would say is a pretty good conclusion, was, hey, no matter if you're ranching in the desert of Nevada or the swamp of Florida, getting less than average precipitation is going to have a negative impact on your bottom line. So this is the one variable that, you know, no matter where you're ranching, is pretty important to you. So, hey, if we could protect that and provide a safety net there, then we should be providing a benefit, which I think was a good conclusion. The details are complicated, and I'll get into some of the cons of that here in a bit. But, you know, the overall goal from the risk management agency, which is the part of the USDA that operates this program, the goal was, let's try to provide a safety net for the livestock producers in a similar way we do for the row crop guys. So like I said, it's created, ran by the Risk Management Agency, a federal agency in Washington, D.C. and Kansas City, but it is sold and serviced by private insurance agencies like ourselves. So you can't walk into your NRCS or another government agency and purchase these products, you have to come to a private company. The RMA, though, is who subsidizes it, and I'll get into those details later. That's the basics. And before I bore everyone with this discussion, anytime anyone wants to jump into the question, please feel free to do so. This slide, again, I don't want to get too caught up in the weeds, but I've touched on the intent was really good, and the general idea is pretty simple. Hey, if you get less than the average precip, you're going to get a payment. Now, measuring that is where it gets very difficult. And this is what this page is describing. What they've done is they divide the country into a grid system, which is 0.25 latitude by 0.25 longitude, where you guys are is probably more like 17 miles north-south, 12 miles east-west. And then they radiate out from that grid and go find the nearest at least four weather stations. So pretty quickly, you can see the flaw in that system is they might be going 60 miles to determine how much snow you guys got yesterday. Well, of course, 60 miles away might have quite a bit of a different snowfall last night than you did on your ranch. So, the negative of this program I always harp on, and I never want someone to buy this product without understanding this, is it is not an extremely accurate program. Thunderstorms are very spotty, especially in the West. Weather stations can get hit and they doesn't hit you. The government is not determining exactly what the precipitation level on your exact ranch was. It is determining an area-based precipitation. So I think that can be really frustrating to a lot of people. Hey, my rain gauge said I got half an inch, and here's the government telling me I got 3 inches. This is crazy. And that can happen. It is inaccurate. Of course, the opposite can happen. You can get hit and the rain station won't. So, over time, theoretically, it'll even out. But I do like to harp on that it is not an overly accurate product. That is how they're gathering the numbers. How they're measuring it is they are not determining if you are dry on it on a year. They're determining if you're dry at 2 month intervals at a time. So the product, and this is a little bit unfortunate. The deadline to sign up for 2022 was December 1st. So if you haven't signed up for 2022, you have missed the boat, and you have to wait for next year. So you're covered for the calendar year, but 2 month intervals of time. So the first one being January, February, the next one being February, March, April, and et cetera. You get to choose which intervals you were covered in and how heavy that you want to be covered in each interval. So again, you don't have to be dry for the entire year. You just got to get dry at 2 month intervals at a time in order to trigger a payment. Unless you guys really want me to dive into that, I'm not going to dive into that tonight of the analysis that goes into how to pick those intervals. It's very complicated. We are really heavy on our analytics. That's kind of what we pride ourselves on. The government database shows all the numbers going back to 1948. So we can go in and see how certain intervals paid on your ranch and how other ones did, and try to, mathematically optimize that. Again, I'm happy to go into that, but I think for tonight's purposes, maybe that's not as important. So kind of sum it up, this page, the negatives, I've said the first one, I can't say it enough, because, if you get into the program and you don't understand this, it can be a very frustrating experience. It is regional based. It is not ranch specific. There will be years that they say you weren't dry when you were. It's going to happen. If you played the game long enough, it will happen. But of course, the opposite should happen as well. So it should even out over time. But it is not ranch specific and not overly accurate. The second one is a rather obvious one to anyone that buys insurance. You can, and not only can you, but if you do the game long enough, you will lose money doing this. There will be years where you pay in money and don't get as much money back, and you have a negative return. The reason I put this on here, the product came out about 10 years ago. It's been pretty dang dry the last 10 years in most of the West. So a lot of people have been doing this program, never have lost money. They've made money every year. And I just like to harp to them, hey, you're going to lose money. So if you don't budget for it, it's going to be a rude awakening that 1 year you get a bunch of precip and you have to pay your premium. Again, an obvious negative, but it is worth stating. So the pros, why I believe in the product, why we've had success in the product, and a lot of our customers have. First, it's completely customizable. You can do as many acres or as few as you want to do. You could do it at a lot of different price levels. I don't know if there's a lot of farmers at the meeting tonight, but if you insure an acre of corn in a county, you have to insure all your acres of corn. That is not true on pasture. You can do as much or as little as you want. I shouldn't say as much. There's limits. You can only do a certain amount per acre. So there's a limit on how high you can go, but there's no limit on how low. The indemnities, and when I say indemnity, that means payment to you. That's determined by algorithm in a computer in an office building. It's not determined by adjusters, which, you know, makes your life pretty easy. There's not someone driving out to your ranch, measuring puddles or, you know, doing any of that. It's all based on computers. So, you know, there's very little paperwork from that standpoint. There's no income limits. There's no AGI requirements for PRF. Anybody can participate no matter your income and no matter the size of the ranch, you can do all of it. You can still do the FSA disaster programs, which a lot of people ask about. And it, a pro I like from, you know, from buying the product is it is confidential. No one knows that you are participating in the program. No one knows how much you're participating in the program other than you and your agent. So it's not like, say, the COVID money, you know, the CARES Act last year where anybody can Google your name or your entity name and see exactly how much you got paid or any of the other disaster programs. This one is not that way. It is not public information. It is completely confidential. The last one, so you signed up by December 1st. Your cover starts on January 1st. You don't pay your bill actually until September 30th of the next year. So in dry years, by the time your bill's due, maybe you owe less of it or none of it, would, you know, kind of helps cash flow wise where you can pay it down the road rather than right now. I ran these numbers last night. I think, you know, they're pretty interesting. This is just what PRF is nationwide. So again, 2007 was the first year. There's 28 million acres insured in the United States for a total premium of 70 million, subsidy of 41 million. And this shows for a dollar a customer put in, what did he get back? He got back $1.51 that first year. The main thing why I think this is interesting is to see the rapid growth of this program. It is now 2021. There was, you know, almost $500 million of subsidy into PRF nationwide. And, you know, 2022 numbers aren't out yet. I would imagine there's going to be a big increase again. So, it went from zero in 2006 to a pretty big deal in 2021. You know, just for comparison's sake, I looked at individual crops on the government website to see what their total subsidy is. And there's only four crops in 2021 that the subsidy was bigger than pasture. And that's corn, soybeans, cotton, and wheat. So we're nowhere close to corn that's getting a $3.1 billion subsidy. But, you know, it is a big program. And more so than it being big, it has rapid growth. And the reason why it's had rapid growth is basically summed up by this column. It's a winner. So this column saying if you put $1 in, and you got $1.51, so you made 51 cents that year per the average guy per dollar put in. You know, these dry years that we've had recently, huge payments. So if it was a dollar, it would be a break even. So you can tell real quickly, there's not been a break even year nationwide. It is a money center for the rancher. And then I looked specifically at Montana, just, you know, thought that'd be interesting. I didn't run it before 2017 because in the early years in the big Western states, it was basically a totally different program. It wasn't measured by the NOAA weather stations measuring precipitation. It was actually measured with Google Earth imagery. So it was, you know, totally different. So I didn't think that was that comparable. You know, pretty big product in Montana. There's three crops that are more heavily subsidized than pasture. So it's number four. So I mean, pretty high. It is interesting. 2019, you know, maybe you guys know better than me. It looks like 2019 was a wet year in Montana. The average policy in Montana lost money in 2019, lost 30 cents on the dollar. Of course, did very well last year. 2021 data is not complete for a few more months, but it's going to be very positive, which I don't think you need me or the government to tell you that Montana has been a drought in 2021. But that will show itself in these numbers. It's been very positive returns for the ranchers in 2021. And that's all I got for PRF. So before I dive into LRP, I'd like any comments or questions or any discussion.
We just jump in here. Yeah, Charles. Yeah, my name is Bill Milton. Yeah, we're in central Montana. And we first got in the program in 2019, overly impressed. But even in this year, you know, a lot of discussions, you know, maybe I'll shop around for other agents. I mean, the guy we're working with is a good guy, but, and they use all the algorithms, but they tend to kind of ensure those 2 month periods based on almost, you know, going back historically and looking at historic returns on those periods and not necessarily on those really key months that we depend on moisture. So April, May, and June, you know, we didn't invest a lot of dollars and acres in those periods, yet those are the ones that have the most impact. So I think one of the confusing things about this program is, in one hand, it's kind of an investment portfolio. Like, if you demonstrated that will return money, if you definitely are working with a good agent, that historically you'll probably, you know, get more money back and you get in. But if, ironically, though, you could have a year like this and not make as much money as you think, or certainly not get the money you would hope you'd get to overcome your expenses of having such a dry year, because you will have invested in months that are more historically high returners versus the ones that aren't. And April, May, and June wouldn't historically be high returns because that's usually the most predictable high moisture time we get in Montana. Yet this year, wouldn't it have been great to just invested a pile of money in those, at least a couple of those months. And like this coming year, we will invest more than average in at least one of those periods. So we were kind of a little bit frustrated this year. You know, we ended up probably getting more money from NAP than we did from, you know, the drought insurance program. So anyway, it's just a heads up to everyone that, you know, have a really smart agent and realize that it isn't really necessarily a black and white drought program. You know, but it is a program that I think, based on your numbers, is a profit center for your ranch.
Really good points, Bill. And you know, we're big numbers guys too. You know, I have a master's in finance, and you know, I can geek out on looking at the analysis and doing the algos and all that stuff. And you know, it's easy. What I say is, you know, I'm sitting at my desk in Colorado. It's easy for me to tell you, oh, these are the best months to insure in, and those are the worst months. But you know, that's just, and not that that's not valuable information. It is valuable information to know, hey, historically these ones are better and those ones are worse. But you know, I do think you do have to balance that with, hey, what's the real world, you know, ramifications on my ranch? And yeah, I might tell you that January, February that's the best interval, put a bunch of acres in there. And you're just thinking to yourself, you know, I don't lose a lot of sleep over January, February. And then here I am telling you, oh, you know, May, June, you don't want to insure there. And maybe that is where you lose your sleep. So, you know, there's only so much a guy at a computer crunching numbers can do. And, you know, I think it is important to balance that with, you know, what is my real world hedge? When is precipitation most important to me? And you know, to me, the right answer is a balance. Let's try to have an interval and a grid selection that works historically, but also provide some real protection to me, you know, on the ground, not just theoretical. So I think those are really good points.
It might be worth it for me to kind of speak to our experience. So I do think that any producer going into this has to try and decide whether they want to treat it more like an insurance project, an insurance, or more like an investment, or a combination of both. And I do think the agent matters a lot. A little plug for Charles and Jen. I do think, I don't have anybody else. I don't have experience with anybody else. So I'm not talking down to any other agents, but I think they have been fantastic to work with. I think they're very advanced in how they analyze this, and I think they do a really nice job. So that's helped. We've kind of made the decision that we're treating it a little bit more like an investment. We think that we are, a little bit of background to our ranch is that we do have a dam above us. So even in drought years, we do have a little bit of buffer that way. We're also in the kind of financial shape that we think we could ride out a tough year or two if that's what was necessary. And so instead we wanted to go for more return. And so we've insured fairly heavily in the fall, late summer, early fall months, because that's what Charles and Jen come back to us and say is going to pay the most, which feels a little funny and it makes you wonder if the program is working the way it should necessarily. But we're like Bill, we grow most of our forage in May and June. And so by putting our insurance heavy in the fall and summer months, if we, in a year like this, if we had really dry spring and didn't grow forage, we would not be well protected. And in fact, we've been in the program, I think this is our fourth year. I think this is the first year we're going to lose money this year, which is really weird because it's the least rain we've got in the 4 years we've been in the program. But this year we got 2 inches of rain in August, which we don't normally get. And our valley happened to be one of the relatively wetter places in the state during the drought, during the spring. So we're not losing all of our principal, but we probably aren't going to quite make it back. However, over the 4 years that we've been involved, it has been a very positive return overall, far above anything we could do with money anywhere else, better than their 70% return average for sure. So I would say, yeah, it has definitely been a profit center for us. And I think that we could choose to spread our investments out a little bit. If we were more spread out this year, I think we would have broken even if we wouldn't have made a ton of money. But because we decided to treat it like an investment and invest a little heavier in the late summer and early fall months, we'll probably lose money this year. But I think, you know, the numbers say over time we ought to make more. And then the last thing I would say is that we did make the decision this year to weight our picks a little bit more towards the 10-year and 20-year average than the 70-year average, because at least in our opinion, we do think that climate change means that maybe the 70-year pattern is not as accurate as the 10 and 20-year pattern. So we've weighted it a little heavier towards the more recent years. But anyway, it's definitely been profitable. But like Charles said, it has not matched our grass production.
I think, well, first, thanks for the kind words, Logan. Appreciate it. You know, I think there's two kind of things you hit on there that are pretty important. You know, one, there isn't a right answer for everyone. You know, it really depends on your situation. That was interesting when you said, you know, you're getting water from the reservoir above you. So, you know, maybe drought's not as impactful on you as it is on another operation. So you can look at it more as an investment. You know, that doesn't mean that's right for everybody. And it, you know, it really comes down to, hey, what's your risk tolerance? You know, do you want to look at this more as a real life hedge, or do you want to look at it more as investment? You know, there's no right answer to that. That's pretty personal stuff. And then, you know, I think the second thing you hit on, and you know, Bill hit on this in a different way, is PRF is not a game that you want to get in and test out and then hop out and get back in, you know, because yeah, Murphy's Law, right? You're gonna get in 2019 and get your ass handed to you. Then you're like, oh, I don't like that program, I'm out of here. Well, then the next year, you know, maybe you would have tripled your money, and then you get back in and it's a negative. You know, it's a lot like, from that standpoint, it is a lot like investments, where, you know, we know the math works. We know that this program is designed for the rancher. You know, we know that in the long term, barring some crazy, you know, wild weather pattern changes, where all of a sudden Montana's at the tropics, barring that, the program's designed for you to win. It's designed, you know, for you to get paid over time on average. But in order to get that math to work for you, you got to stay in the game and have a long-term vision, you know, just like your stocks. You don't want to buy Apple today and sell it tomorrow and then buy another one. You know, that inherently increases the risk a lot. So, you know, I think a long-term view of PRF is definitely the smart way to look at it.
I'll just add to that quickly. And I'll echo Logan's comments on Charlie and Jen. We've worked with both of them and been really happy with the service we've gotten from them. We also started in 2019. And I think just interest in this conversation about the approach, insurance versus investment, I think we had some different viewpoints, family members here, some that saw it more just as the insurance. So that one bad year, I can't remember, maybe we started in 2018 and I can't remember, we maybe broken even and got hammered 2019. So that was the thought then, was we're just not going to continue because this feels like it's a bad deal for us. But I think if we had had that approach of looking at it more as an investment long-term, then it would have been a whole lot easier selling all the family members on sticking with it. So now we're back into it, but we've missed probably two pretty good years that definitely would have helped us. So I think that approach is interesting, thinking about it from those two different perspectives and getting everybody on board in the business or the family.
I guess I'd like to throw in that I'm one of these guys that has done everything wrong. This is Dale Vseth. I was a little frustrated this year. We used the April, May, June, July intervals, basically because those are the months that if we don't get moisture, we're in tough shape. And I've been in it 4 years. It's paid one interval, and we just opted not to do it. And I see the numbers. It looks like there's somebody that could help me out there, because it looks like you should be able to make money with this program. But evidently I can't.
And I will say, Dale, that it does vary. You know, these are averages. This is Montana average, and this is national average that we've been looking at. You know, so our family ranches mostly in eastern Colorado, but also up into the mountains. And we have a ranch in the San Grado Cristo mountain range of Colorado. We do not insure. And, you know, that's coming from me, that, you know, we want to insure everything. We love it. We think it's a great deal. Those grids just don't work. They, you know, there's a weather station, you know, I don't want to get into all the gnarly details, but for reasons, it's not a very good return there. You know, that's very, very rare. I shouldn't say that's common. You know, I've seen a few of these, and I actually have seen some in Montana that are pretty tough grids. So, you know, my point is there's no way to know. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, yeah, your ranch should make a killing on this. You know, I don't know until I look at it, because there is a possibility that it's just not in a good area.
And I guess I had some feedback. We were setting at about 50% of our average. I have weather records on the ranch from 1960. And so I got the phoning around past my agent, and I kind of went up the chain. And one of the problems I thought with our grid is they don't look at my records, because I don't record every day. I'm a monthly recorder. So most of these have to be municipalities. And so our closest municipality is at 4,500 feet. And we're setting at 2,600 feet at my house. And so that would be my west quadrant. I think my south quadrant was probably Lewistown, and they're also setting at over 4,000. And so that's what I was speculating. I might have been messing us up, but I don't know.
Yeah, like I say, there are, well, I'll just paint one scenario why it can happen. Usually when we see really poor grids, it is in mountains. And on the converse, where we've seen the best grids are in the mountains. And, you know, I think the reason is there's kind of microclimates in some of these mountain areas. And, you know, maybe your area has microclimates. And what's happened is they're comparing the precip they measured this year with every year since 1948. Well, if they went in there in 2014 and built a new weather station, that weather station didn't exist the previous 60 years, but they're comparing it to those years, it can really make the numbers out of whack one way or the other. You know, maybe they put the new weather station in a hole that gets no precipitation, so those guys are getting huge payments because it, you know, it's comparing it to back in the day where that weather station didn't exist. Maybe in your scenario the opposite has happened, and they put a weather station, you know, on top of the mountain that's getting dumped on, or, you know, wherever in some microclimate. So yeah, like I say, it's not common. You know, probably 90% of the grids, probably more than that, probably 95% of the grids that I've ever looked at, you know, we do this in 20 states. And I think probably 95% of the grids are pretty close to the bell curve, but there are ones that are at the ends of the bell curve.
In defense of the grids, I talked to a neighbor that he just broke his intervals up between all the intervals, and he got a pretty good payment out of it. And where I was setting, I've been using just our big rain months, because we get half our precip during those 3 months. And so that's where I was treating it like an insurance product. And so I know on the ground that, just from the other conversations here, that I'd probably be more successful if I looked at a little different interval system.
I think it's important. We're always thinking about the fact that it pays on variability more than it pays on a dry year. And two of the years we got our biggest payments, we had some of the wetter springs that we've ever had. And when we look at our grid, we're more variable late, even though early is our grass growing months. And so that's why we are, quote unquote, investing in those later months, is because of that variability. And also reading the Montana climate report, when I read that, I think it's hard to take too much from it because it's a state average again. But again, the call is for over the next 20, 30 years, to possibly wetter springs even, but likely drier summers and falls is what I read when I read in there. And I think that's another reason we've done that. And again, I get that Charles would know way more than me in terms of microclimates, and that could be completely different from more microclimates. But I guess that was another piece of consideration in our mind, is that on the whole, that's what they're projecting on average, is more and more variability, especially late. So anyway, that's how we've looked at it.
That's absolutely right. Variability of precip is what makes certain intervals perform much better historically than others. Variability is the key predictor. And to kind of think through that logically, you know, I know where I live the best, and here we get very little precipitation from November through January. You know, those three months, we get very little, but 1 out of 5 years, we'll get that, you know, foot and a half blizzard. So that 18 inches drives our average up. For the other 4 out of 5 years, we get basically nothing. So we're well below that average, you know, versus maybe March, April is a much more steady precip. So that variability is the key.
Well, I'll be talking to you, because I was in for 4 years. I was so disgusted this year that we dropped it. So I've done just exactly what you said was bad, but that's where we are.
I'm happy to talk anytime. Well, anything else on the PRF, or I can slip into the LRP side? Well, I'll move on. Not that we can always come back to PRF, but for now, move on to the LRP. So LRP stands for Livestock Risk Protection. Came from the same legislation that PRF came from, took even longer, has been around for a while, but not really as the beast it is now. Right at the beginning of COVID, actually, they really upped the subsidy. It used to only be a 13% subsidy, and now it's, you know, up to 35%. So it is a better product now, mostly for that reason. Same agency runs it, still private guys. For anybody that is hedged before or understands the commodity markets, it is very similar to a put option with a couple key differences, and I'll get into those. But for very simple terms, it is a government subsidized put option, which I actually listened to. Holly sent out those last three discussions, and I listened to, it sounds like you guys were talking a little bit about put options. So again, you know, just like PRF, yeah, maybe the concept's simple. It is very, very, there's a lot of details. You know, you can only do a certain amount of head per year. There's limits on that. The type of cattle you are protecting changes the pricing. There's, just like PRF, there's different coverage levels you can do. And then unlike PRF, it has different ending dates. You know, you can insure for 2 months from now, or as little as 3 months from now, or as much as a year. So, you know, it's very customizable. There's a lot of details. I'm going to glaze over those for today's purposes. So I'm just going to jump into what is the negatives of LRP. This one people talk about a lot, and I think, or I know whoever was giving that talk the other day mentioned this, and it's definitely true. All are what's called a European option. So unlike American options, you know, if you buy a regular put through your broker, you can get in and out of that however you please, whenever you please. LRP, once you were in it, you were in it, and you were locked into it until expiration. So that, you know, especially guys that are really comfortable or used to put options, that takes a long time to get used to. That's a different deal that you can't get out of it until it expires. Another negative, there are maximums on head. So unlike PRF, where a guy that has 1 million acres can do it all, LRP, you do run into limits. The daily quotes are really inconsistent. So it is in a way derived from the CME. So depending on what the market is trading that day in Chicago, you know, if I zip back here, they say that there's all these different ending dates that you can do, 13 weeks, 17, all the way to 52 weeks. But the thing is, those might be offered tomorrow morning. They might not be. You don't know. It's based on a volume that's being traded in Chicago. So it is inconsistent and kind of unreliable. You can't be, you can't come up with your risk protection plan for the year and be like, say, okay, on April 15th, I'm going to protect my yearlings for a September 15th delivery, you know, at $1.40. Because maybe you can do that on April 15th. Maybe you can't. You don't know what the exact offerings are going to be that day. You can get close to what you want, but you can't guarantee this can be exact. That's not unlike the market, but it's a little even more inconsistent than going and getting your puts on the market. Just like doing traditional, you know, futures or options, there is basis risk. You know, the numbers are based on the national indexes, not on your local market. So, you know, it does not do anything to protect you against basis risk. The pros, again, it's subsidized. There's no income limits, you know, no AGI requirements. Premiums are tax deductible. It's on a per head basis rather than a truckload, which that's really nice from the customization side. You know, you don't have to have exactly 50,000 pounds or whatnot. You can do it on the actual amount of head you expect to deliver. Futures contracts are only available in certain months. This is theoretically available in all months. You don't have to sell the cattle at the end date. You have to retain their own for most of the time, but you do not have to sell them. If you thought you were going to sell your calves in the fall and then decided for whatever reasons you're going to hold them over, you sure can do that. Then there are, you know, it depends on your lender and their comfort or their knowledge of LRP, but there are instances where LRPs, you know, some lenders love LRP. They like it. They like that it's a European option because then, you know, it kind of saves you from yourself and trying to, you know, bet the market. You're locked in. They know that you're not going to take off coverage. You have to keep on the coverage. And then they can get an assignment of indemnity on it, which is another thing they like. And that's all I got. You know, talking from this from a big picture, you know, I think PRF close to PRF is a very good deal. You know, any ranch we get, unless they're in that one grid that's on the end of the bell curve, you know, we believe in PRF. We think basically everybody should be using PRF, and it's a really, really good product, and it's designed for us. It's going to win over time. You know, LRP, you know, I'm not going to give it that endorsement. You know, I think it has pros, has cons. I think it has to be part of a bigger risk management plan. You know, you can't, where I've seen the most success with this, you know, we've hired on some guys that are commodity brokers and they do the LRP. And I think that's really key to have the knowledge, be in both markets, because there are times where LRP is considerably better than a put. And there's times that puts better than LRP. And then there's times that doing a futures contract is going to make more sense. And there's times doing a forward contract is going to make more sense. You know, I think it's got to be a piece of a bigger plan. You know, I think some guys try to use LRP as their entire risk management plan when it comes to marketing. And, you know, I don't endorse that. You know, I think it's got to be a piece of a bigger puzzle. So I'll open it up. That's what I got about LRP.
Charles, I'm pretty new to these programs. Last year, we hedged with options, a few groups of stockers, more to learn the process than anything. Can you explain to me, you know, you said that sometimes LRP might be not as attractive as a put, even though it's subsidized by, say, 20 to 35%. Can you explain, like, what kind of scenario is that true in?
One interesting thing about LRP is, so it's expected ending price. So let's say you're putting on coverage today for a calf delivered in November. What it is basing, what the expected value of that calf in November is based off of the CME. So it's going to be very similar to, you know, going out and getting a November put option. But now fast forward to November and it's expiration day. Well, the CME is going to settle, you know, it is not based on the CME. It is based on the cash index, which at times, and especially here, you know, in recent history, cash basis, you know, the difference between the cash market and the futures market can be fairly significant, and that can work both pro and con. So that would be a scenario if you, for some reason, you know, we're worried that cash was going to be weak in the fall, then LRP would be your better buy, or if it's going to be strong. So let's fast forward to November. Let's say the expected was what, $1.70, let's call it today. And let's say the cash market on November 3rd, when your LRP expires, let's say the cash market's at, is really strong and it's at $1.80, even though the futures market's at $1.70, that difference is going to make a big difference. You know, I use bad numbers. Let's, for this purposes, say the expected any value was $2 and you get there and the cash market's $1.80 and the futures market's $1.70. Well, the $1.70, that's going to make you 30 cents rather than the LRP made you 20 cents. And that can work both ways. Like say, maybe the cash is weak and it's at $1.60 and now you made 40 cents on the cash rather than you would have made 30 cents on the futures. That is pretty complicated because it's one, it's very hard to predict what can happen to the cash basis, but that is a scenario. And you know, again,
so can I probably need to ask a better question, or maybe I just missed the answer, but so that's true for both LRP and put option though, right? That you could, your cash market, that basis risk that your cash market is either better or worse than say the CME is true in both programs.
Oh, no, right? No. I'm not talking about, you're talking about your like local basis. I'm talking more about there's basis between the national cash index and the national futures index and can be a pretty significant difference either way.
So yeah. I guess I don't know what the national cash index.
So what this is based off of is a national cash index. So they collect, you know, actual sales from feed yards around or from sale barns around the country. And they come up with what is the cash index this day. And that number is released every morning. There's both a live cattle and a feeder cattle number. Okay. Yeah. It gets complicated. Happy to talk about it, but yeah, there is a national cash basis and that can go either way. And then, you know, a much more simple reason why LRP can be worse or better than PRF, the government, you know, it's a pretty complicated way they're calculating LRP and it is very variable. So, you know, I go back here, you know, I said the subsidy can be 20 to 35%. So let's just say you're doing the 35% one. Well, we track this every day, what the difference between comparable put option and comparable LRP is. You would think, it's subsidized 35. It should always be 35% cheaper. It's wild range. Some days it's really a lot cheaper than LRP. And then other days, sometimes it could be more expensive than LRP. And all the factors go into that are really complicated. And I don't even understand or come close to understanding. Our LRP guys have a pretty good understanding of it. But yeah, again, theoretically, you think that it's always 30% cheaper than a put. And it's just not true. It really varies. So that'd be the simple reason why sometimes a put is better than LRP. You know, I do think that European versus American option deal is important too. You know, if you really want
flexibility.
Flexibility, then, you know, LRP is not going to be for you. And I think there's instances when that flexibility is more important than instances when it's not. Yeah. Anybody else have anything on LRP?
Charles, do you find, I don't know how much experience you have with this, but so instead of comparing it to put options, comparing it to, I'm getting my terminology wrong again, rather than options, I'm thinking of
futures.
Yeah. And comparing it to futures, how do you think about comparing which is the best tool between those two?
Yeah, I get back to, you know, that's why I'm always pretty hesitant on LRP because I think it's just really got to be a part of that bigger picture. You know, we use both. We use futures and I should say we use both. We use all three. We use LRP some, we use put some, we use futures some. They're just, LRP and puts are very similar. Futures is different in that, futures, you're locking in a price, right? So what a put you're doing is you're locking in a floor and for a little bit of money, but you can still participate in the upside. A future, much more comparable to a forward contract where, hey, I'm selling you these cattle for $1.70 in November. There's no upside. There's no downside. It's just what it is.
The downside is missing out on future high prices and the upside is missing out on future low prices.
Right, exactly. And we can get even much more complicated than this. There's, you know, there's synthetic put options. There's all sorts of different tools. And yeah, there's no silver bullet and there's no one instance that's just, you know, makes sense for everybody. It very much depends on your situation and the timing of the market and everything else.
Obviously, you don't know this. You don't know what the market's going to do, but I'm just trying to make sure I understand this all theoretically. So theoretically, if you were to, you know, if the market in the future had a lot of upside, you'd be better off with, say, LRP insurance out of those products because you would get all that upside. You just have a set fee that you paid to protect them instead of locking in a price. However, on average, LRP is probably quite a bit more expensive than futures, right? Than to lock in the price. Don't you pay more per head on average to sort of lock in the floor?
Yeah.
But about that, right?
To put it in very simple terms, if you know November is going to be higher than you know than it is today,
you wouldn't do any of them.
Best thing is to do nothing, right? Yeah. The second best thing is to have a very, they call it out of money, a very low level either put or LRP that costs you, you know, it's just insurance. It's if there's a black swan event between now and November and the world falls apart, it protects you against that. But, you know, 19 out of 20 times, you're just out your premium. So that'd be the second best thing to do in a bull market. The flip side, if November's going to be bad, the best thing to do is, well, either forward contract or future, whatever is available to you. But that'd be the best thing to do. The worst thing to do would be to do nothing, and LRP would be in the middle, if that simplifies it. And yeah, you know, the cheapest thing to do in history, that's a tough answer. I mean, you know, what I would say is selling and buying at the right time is probably the best risk protection, right? You know, if July is the seasonal high to sell calves, selling calves every July is what's going to be the best long term. You know, that's more important than your hedging plan, in my opinion. So selling right and buying right are probably your two best risk protection. And that's not something that a guy that sells risk management products should say, but I think, you know, from a bigger plan, that to me is the most important part.
So kind of one other comparison between sort of the, might get my acronyms wrong, but the pasture rangeland insurance is the PRF, right? And the LRP, it seems to me, so I'm asking rather than telling this, but it seems like when I look at the PRF program, it's a net winner over time, the math says, right? That you put money in, you're going to get more money out of it over time. If I'm looking at LRP, even if it's cheaper than, say, put options, like you said, the most profitable thing theoretically is probably like, so if you could stomach all the ups and all the downs without any insurance and ride it out, you would wind up better off without LRP because there's some, or options actually, because in each of those scenarios, there's either some kind of, you always pay a set fee with the LRP and the market probably goes up on the whole over time for the other one. But so in other words, if you could theoretically stomach the cash flow that came with all the ups and downs, and you never did LRP, you'd probably be money ahead. However, it's protecting you from those black swan events where you couldn't afford to, say, pay your loan back or something like that. Am I thinking about that right?
Yeah, I would agree with most of what you said. Yeah, you know, it is more of an actual insurance product. PRF, and I know this is being recorded and I probably should say this, it's not an insurance product, right? I mean, that's not really what it is. It's, you know, maybe more of a hedge. A put option is insurance. And yeah, on average, statistically, you're better off if you don't buy, you know, fire insurance on your house, right? You're just going to save that $20 a month for the rest of your life if you can weather the up and the down. And, you know, it's very hard to predict, though, what's the cattle market. You know, I sure like to believe that we're up for the cattle cycles in a good spot and we have good years ahead of us. But I mean, one, very hard to predict. So who knows? Yeah, but I agree. If you could handle the downs, but there might be some pretty big downs and having,
for sure,
you know, if your house burns down, probably wish you had the insurance.
Can I ask a question?
You bet.
What about in the LRP, I guess what's going through my mind right now is they have the unborn calf section that you can buy into.
Mm-hmm.
Could you maybe dive into that for just a half a second?
And sure. So it used to be that you couldn't protect it. You couldn't buy LRP for an animal that wasn't alive, you know, versus on a put option, you don't even have to own cattle. You just buy a put option speculatively. RMA or LRP through RMA, you do have to have the underlying live animal. But, and I think it was a good exception that they made. And I remember asking this early on, like, you know, yeah, I don't have any calves right now, but I know I'm going to have calves come 5 months from now. So why can't I protect, you know, that future revenue source? And it wasn't that way for a long time. And now it is. But, and I do apologize. We hired brokers that are way, way better at the livestock products than us. I used to be really up to speed on the LRP. Now I'm more of a high level and I don't you know, in terms of how soon can you predict that unborn kid, you know, does that have to be a month away or 3 months away? I honestly can't answer that. I would have to send you to our LRP specialist to answer those detailed questions. But I do know now that you do have the option to protect unborn calves, which I think is very smart.
Hey, Charles, really quick. How do you get paid? If someone hires you, do you get paid up front or is it an advisory role or do you get paid through the premium?
Sure. Yeah, we get paid through the premiums. It's actually subsidized as well. So, you know, on PRF, when it's saying it's 51% subsidy, it's actually more than that because, so yeah, RMA pays 51% of your premium. They also pay the administrative, I forget the term, but yeah, they pay our commission. And our commission is a percent basis. So the bigger the policy, the more we get paid. And it's just purely on what we sell. And yeah, we're purely middlemen. You know, we're not underwriting this. Large insurance companies are underwriting it. So, you know, we, not that we want everyone to be in a terrible drought, that's not good either, but our incentive is aligned with the customer's incentive that we want you to get paid because that increases your chances of buying it again. So that's why, you know, we want to select your intervals in the best possible way because that's going to be the best possible way for us as well.
And the other question I wanted to ask really quick is, you know, we'll have some folks tuning in later to watch the recording. And obviously we don't have enough time to really cover a lot of what it would be nice to cover, especially from an introductory standpoint. So do you have some resources, both written and maybe video logs or podcasts or things that we can reference after this that you could provide?
Yeah, you know, I think what I could also send some pamphlets, but you know, probably the best thing is just go to our website and one, our contact info there is there, but two, we also have the basic information sheet on pasture insurance, livestock insurance. I'll show you the PRF one right here. So yeah, eastcoatgroup.com is where I would point you. There's a quick information sheet on both products. That what you're looking, does that work?
The question along the seasonality of the cash market, is there a historical perspective where you could look at in our area, you know, we'd have the Billings markets, which historically has a fall run. And if they're reporting and that's for the cash market, there's going to be a seasonal dip probably in the cash market. Is there any historical charts or anything that we can look at to because you could, you know, if you did that and just routinely did that, you might be able to get a little bit more to the positive side of that, even in an uptrending market, because I kind of view this as a little more difficult to make work in an uptrending market versus a downtrending market in general. I'm just curious about that seasonality.
Yeah, no, our guys, yeah, they look big time at the seasonality. And, you know, if it's a counter seasonal year, then it's kind of the opposite. It's, you know, it's confusing. And, but yeah, we do a lot of that and look in the seasonal charts, you know, be that, hey, fat cattle are usually high in March and April or feeders are low at Thanksgiving or, you know, whatever kind of, you know, there's kind of some sayings that people go by, but we get very detailed into the seasonal charts. And I would say I'd say the main tool what we're looking at is the comparison between LRP and the put and what is cheaper, more expensive that day. But I'd say the second tool we're looking at is seasonal charts and yeah, try to put on coverage, you know, at a high and try to have your expiration date at a seasonal low or close to a seasonal low. And yeah, that's what we're looking at all the time. And I can say, and I think it's on here, but if you guys want to learn more about LRP or talk about LRP, and he's actually my cousin, but also our broker and our LRP specialist is Brady Buck. And yeah, he could dive deep into all the seasonals and answering your unborn cattle questions and any of that type of stuff. And if anybody wants to talk to me directly, just Charles at East Coast Group, you just email me at that. And I think we could all see each other's emails from what Holly sent out the link to. I'm on that as well.
Charlie, one very quick thing back to PRF. Can you just talk about lease property, how that works? That's certainly been part of our program of that. It's fairly simple, but I guess if anybody is wondering if they can sign up lease acres, what the process is there.
Yep. So the quick answer is yes, you can insure leased acres. You know, all government leases are quite easy to insure, you know, be it BLM, forest, state, all those. Private leases are a little more complicated, but very doable. You have to have control of the property for the calendar year. They can still limit when you graze. It just has to be that you have control of the property. And a good point on PRF is you do have to, and I shouldn't even say that black and white, but it is designed for the person that owns the livestock. So, you know, if you're leasing someone's ranch and you're running all the cattle, you know, in the vast majority of instances, it's you that, you know, has the right to the PRF insurance, not the landowner. There's been a lot of gray area in the past, doing some lawsuits and whatnot on that topic, and they've kind of made it more black and white now. But the simple answer is it's the person that owns the cattle in most instances is who has the right to the insurance. But yeah, to answer Alex's question, lease land is definitely on the table.
Does anybody else have any other questions? Well, I guess thank you very much, Charles, for coming on and helping us understand these programs.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me. And, I think you guys have a neat program here, and seems like a good tradition.